and welcome to, at long last, episode 45 of the Strong Style Story Podcast. I am your host, Selector Jeffrey Wesley. You can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. The blog is at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. With me today is the OG, as it were, our producer, Chris Damasceno. Chris, what's up, brother?
More of an OG than the actual Bullet Club OGs, to say the least. We have kind of a lot of things to cover, so I'll just keep introductions short. We definitely
get stuff. We do have a lot to cover, because it's been a long time since we did an episode, and things actually changed quite a bit in that time. We'll do the behind the scenes stuff first. So we joked all last episode that our constant bickering and little snide remarks towards Chad Campbell Place to Be Nation, we're gonna get us fired off of the network. And then immediately following that, Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only kind of split affiliates. They're no longer affiliated, so we ended up on the Pro Wrestling Only side of the divorce, as it were. So they have custody of us for right now. We haven't gotten visitation sorted out yet, but Brad and Chad, we thank you for bringing us aboard to begin with, and So this podcast no longer is part of Place to Be Nation. It's part of Pro Wrestling Only exclusively at this point. So
does this make us millennials because we killed that entire partnership?
I don't know. I think I'm a little old to be a millennial. I'm a last millennial at this point. I think I'm a little old to be a millennial. But we are just on the place. On the Pro Wrestling Only board side of things. So when we start, hyping this again, that's how that's going to be. And there are still some great shows on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, including shout out to Peter Winson of Greetings from Allentown, Through the Years, and the Worldcast, if you'd like your old World Class Championship Wrestling. Match of the Week, Who Booked This, other fine programming. But there's been some other changes that are happening behind the scenes with this show as well. And the biggest change that's going to be happening is basically, as much as I talked about hitting the wall last episode, Lawrence O'Brien actually did hit the wall. So he's asked to take a leave of absence, a hiatus from doing this show for a good while, and that's fine. I mean, this isn't like, this isn't professionally done. This isn't like career's not on the line here. So, and why force somebody to do something that they don't want to do?
Yeah, definitely understand. I mean, Lawrence has been with us for quite some time.
Quite some time, ever since the Super J Cup show way back in 2016. Ever since,
AKA
that.
the only good thing that came out of the Super J Cup was that episode.
Yeah, seriously.
That is it.
That was it. Yeah, but I mean, and Lawrence, we did a lot of stuff with Lawrence. Both on this show and outside of this show. I mean, of course, he was part of the big trip for the initial G1 special shows in Long Beach back in summer 2017, and he was a huge part of that, and he and I even hit the aquarium, and that was pretty cool. Y'all should have come with us to the aquarium for that. In any event,
yeah.
But if you miss hearing Lawrence's dulcet tones, he has his own project now outside of wrestling. It's actually a college football scouting podcast called Prospect Profile, and you could find it if you look on both Podbean and on iTunes.
Yeah, through on Podbean, it should be under prospect profile at podbean.com. Lawrence has done a really good job with the first two episodes that he's got out.
Yeah, I haven't listened. He just released the second one today. I haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Yeah, neither have I, but I'm planning on that sometime during this week.
But the first episode, the first episode, yeah, was very good. So Lawrence, you're doing good so far, buddy. So yeah, and
very excited to see where it goes.
And let's be frank, Steve Cash, he's still our dude, he's still our homeboy, but I don't even know if we can really consider him a host at this point because I can't remember the last episode he was on. You know,
as life and things going on, but we'll always happily have him when he's ready.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a space for him here. So I think for the time being, it's just going to be me and Chris doing this show, and the frequency of it. I'm sure the pro wrestling only guys would really like this to be like a more regularly scheduled program, but we just can't do that, unfortunately. Our schedules just don't.
Life has just been a little bit crazier. The past 2 months, especially, life has been a little bit crazier. I think for all sides of the fence between
the
two of us, and then obviously with other people too. So
yeah, I mean, I just took a trip to England, for example, and some things happened there that I'm gonna have to reevaluate. You know, my time and things, and plus I have another show as well. Outside of Strong Style Story and Strong Style History, for that matter, called Busting Balls. If you haven't heard that one yet, it's more along the lines. It's more of it's a soccer, professional soccer podcast. And you can find that soundcloud.com/busting-balls if you have any interest in that. But we've been doing this for nearly 3 years. We're almost to our anniversary. You know, it's like we got 2 months to our anniversary show, but I think for Chris and I, our priorities are suddenly being shifted on us. You know, I mean, I can't speak entirely for Chris. I think I'm sure Chris, you would agree with me on this, that our priorities are kind of changing a little bit.
It's definitely the focus is shifting into some other aspects of our own personal lives. We're still keeping up with pro wrestling and what we like to watch out of it as much as we can, but time constraints, real life is happening, can all play a factor into stuff. So we'll definitely still try to come up with things as much as we can before we sort of have our own work around our plan.
Yeah, and I mean, and like I said, this show has never been on like a regular schedule. It's usually just been between tours is usually when we do it. You know, because that way we preview a tour, it happens, we talk about it, we preview the next one. Rinse, repeat. And I just know that my schedule has never been able to accommodate a weekly podcast. I mean, even Busting Balls, the other host of that, John Arnold and myself, we've done pretty well to keep it about biweekly. But even then, we can't always do it. So, which by the way, I just posted a new episode of that too. So, but
good stuff. That said, though, we definitely have been away for a little while, so I think
this is about
as good of a time to kind of jump in and just recap some quick stuff.
Yeah, and I think a lot of our enthusiasm is also waiting for doing this show because I think overall the direction that New Japan's been going in lately is kind of sapping our enthusiasm for wanting to do it, and I think that we'll get on topic and actually talk about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. It's just one of those things that we can definitely start doing that by covering, to begin with, what some of the major events that happened, Road to Destruction, which have been things such as the defenses, one of the two defenses of the briefcase that Hiroshi Tanahashi did win by winning G1 Climax against a longtime nemesis, Kazuchika Okada. At the end, Tanahashi finally got some vindication after nearly 4 years of not being able to beat the guy in singles matches. So,
yeah,
that was a thing that definitely happened.
It was a thing that happened. I just don't know. I mean, again, this is, again, just another thing about the direction of things. So, yeah, that did happen. I didn't even get to watch this show live because I was actually in England when it happened. But yeah, know, also, mm-hmm. We'll talk about at least the destruction in Kobe, at least. And then, yeah, they're and you know, with what we know now of the results from King of Pro Wrestling this past Monday, yeah, they're going for it. They are going for, they are going for Kenny Omega versus Hiroshi Tanahashi. As the main event at
for the
Wrestle
matches
Kingdom.
Of ideologies at this point. So,
yeah, mm-hmm. I mean that's about the only thing I could see at this point. And just between you and me, Chris, mm-hmm. this does not inspire me to take the day off of work like last Wrestle Kingdom did. You know, it really doesn't.
The thing about it, at the very least, is that this will be the Wrestle Kingdoms are coming up near the end of the week, so that even if you're not specifically catching them live per se, at least you're not going to be taking a day out of the middle of your week to sort of recharge from that. You can actually do it at your own pace, I feel.
New Year Dash is on a Saturday coming up this January too, so yeah.
I'll be at MacFest that particular week, and so odds are I'll probably be in a hotel room with a bunch of other guys that watch this stuff and will probably be watching it live both nights. So,
right.
RIP our bodies. So, this is fine. But again, I think a lot of it is that we had such expectations on what direction they were possibly going at the beginning of the year. So, to then see a complete 360, not a 360, because that would be obviously going back to where you were originally began, but at a 180. Yeah, 180 is what I meant to say, excuse me.
Yeah.
But doing it a 180 to where it pleases certain fans, but then certain fans have been watching for a while are just going, okay, what the fuck is going on right now?
Well, I
get both sides of the fence.
Yeah, I think that's been our general thing. It's like, between the destruction shows and then Fighting Spirit Unleashed and still King of Pro Wrestling too, I don't see an actual direction for this company right now. And I think that's really, like I said, sapping my enthusiasm for this. I mean, yeah, okay, a lot of the malaise that I'm seeing online has to do directly with Tetsuya Naito and how it's being how he's perceived as being treated. I just, you know, here's my thing. I just don't see. I think they're just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what's sticking at this point. Is my thing. And
a lot of, and Jeff, to your point on that, a lot of it makes me wonder how much of that is on the new leadership transition that just happened earlier this year.
Well, yeah, I think that a lot of that is happening because I think we're starting to see like a lot of this malaise really did start. I mean, among the fans, obviously, there's always been people who have been critical of this era of New Japan, but I think the malaise among the fans right now really has started ever since Harold May took over in New Japan. And at this point it's like I don't really see a clear direction what's happening with this company, because like even if we just take Naito, okay, so he was feuding with Chris Jericho, but wait, maybe he's feuding with Zack Sabre Jr. Oh wait, no, Evil's gonna take on the Zack Sabre Jr. feud, and then Jericho too. It's like, wait a minute, who's feuding with whom here? And now, obviously, the power struggle lineups, maybe clarified some of this, but then when we had the Jay White situation, and you know he's splitting with, from Chaos. I thought maybe finally, yes, we're gonna get a Chaos breakup. You know, after, you know, because I mean that unit's been around for 9 years, which is far too long for a unit to be together, if you ask me. But no, he's just. And then I make the offhanded remark about, hey, you know, what are the chances of, you know, the of Jay White and Gato, of this new era, and then the BCOGs teaming up, and boom, that happens. So, okay, yeah, okay.
And I'll say...
Oh, go ahead.
And as an intermendum, I will say this. I actually like this, considering the fact that Jay White is from New Zealand, and there is that kind of Oceania connection between them and the Tongans to that extent.
Yeah.
So at the very least,
well, Fale's from New Zealand, right, too. I mean, Fale's a Kiwi, too. Yeah, yeah, so...
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So there is definitely that playing a hand into that much, but... And a lot of it, I definitely feel that there is this whole idealism of, hey, we're using this main event between Tana, the old ace of the old era, with the old ideology on what New Japan should look like and what a match type should look like there, compared to Kenny Omega, who's sort of the new school, if you will, type of train of thought in terms of matches, exposure, and what you will. So you kind of have that clash of ideologies being a thing, but it feels like that's more appealing to a Western expansion audience than it is for the audiences that have been within Japan, kind of keeping up with this. And it sort of brings up another point where the westward expansion of New Japan, I get doing these shows in California, but I've noticed how interest has seemingly gotten, they've kind of done to where there might be some very early oversaturation in that market, which is not really a good thing.
Well, yeah, and by any means. Yeah, and we need to talk about that too, because let's compare some of these big shows, like All In, that went, you know, that went within 30 minutes. I think the Ring of Honor New Japan co-promotion show in Madison Square Garden went around equivalent time, I think. I mean, they sold that out.
Within an hour.
Yeah, the Walter Pyramid did not sell out. I mean, it was blatantly obvious, no, because, mm-hmm, you know, the seats in the Walter Pyramid are bright yellow, so we, mm-hmm, can see it.
And
on.
You
we,
can see it.
We
noticeable.
Can see him.
It
I
is
mean,
very noticeable.
And then, you know, and Kenny Omega, even acknowledging the empty seats, like, why the hell would you do that? What in God's name would possess you to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, we didn't sell out this show? I mean, even Scott Steiner, at the peak of the lowest valley of WCW, wasn't doing that, and he was the exact sort of guy who would do that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And
a lot of it just feels very much like hindsight is 20/20 on some of these, and you do it. A lot of it makes me feel at this point that it's good to have the California shows every once in a blue moon, with cards advanced beforehand, so that way people actually know what the hell they're getting themselves into. I think,
yes,
that's one of the biggest problems.
Yeah, I mean, because that's completely the opposite of how New Japan sells these shows. I mean, we know the, mm-hmm, we know the card beforehand, generally. Okay, like, certain things, like if it's a tournament final, obviously we're not going to know that. But, you know,
I have an idea.
Yeah, we have an idea of what's going to be on the show. I mean, yet they didn't fully announce Power Struggle yet, but we have six matches announced. Okay, that's a pretty good idea of what's going to be on this show, you know?
And, yeah, you can work around that, basically.
Yeah,
build the card around those particular types of matches.
Right.
So, and that's fine.
But then, you know,
we
but
just
this,
would like to see a little bit more of that in the Western Hemisphere if you're going to book these shows in California on a consistent system basis.
Right. And we're going to talk all. About and we're going to talk about two of the upcoming shows in California too, cuz I'm not going to bury those for a couple of reasons, but we'll get into that here in a little bit. But so you know, at the same time, it's like you're acknowledging the empty seats. Why the I just don't understand why the hell you would do that. I don't get that. And I there are just, you know, certain things like I think part of this malaise is been a very uninspiring run by Kenny Omega as the IWGP champion.
Oh, good. Thank God we both agree on that. Jesus fucking Christ.
This has been a singularly uninspiring run. And I mean, it started pretty much from the beginning when, you know, right after he wins, he did a racism. he did a racism and yeah, I lost some friends over debating this point, but you know, I don't give a shit because it was what it was. And then booking a known registered child sex offender on the Daytona Beach show, which I will remind everybody I was live at, you know, and it just, and going from there, and the matches he's had, his title defenses have just, they have not been good. I mean, they've been, you know, for all his talk of being the best bout machine, his title defense matches have not been inspiring at all.
No.
It's been a lot of him pulling faces to generate emotion, and it became apparent during the G1 special in San Francisco show when, you know, he's trying to, you know, wring every ounce of worked emotion he can out of this match, you know, which followed a match that had real emotion because we had a goddamn shoot happen, you know, mm-hmm. where we got genuine emotion flowing, you know?
Yeah. Also, it's one of those things, it's what I call, like, the Kobashi effect, where Kenny's trying to emulate all the actual expressions that Kobashi tended to do in his bouts, but then again, Kobashi managed to actually get real emotion out of the people around him in doing that, while Kenny just kind of looks like a goof while he's doing that. I'm sorry. So
he does.
Kenny Omega fans out there, but...
And, well, you know, I don't care, because I've been on record saying this. I preferred Kenny when he was the comedy anime supervillain in the junior division, because that shtick worked. You know,
and he played to his strengths in that particular shtick. On top of it, like, Kenny Omega is a dork, and that's okay. Like, it's okay to be that.
Yeah, be a dork. Yeah, if that's your shtick, be a dork. But don't try to be that. We're gonna change the world, dude. You couldn't even change the show that you booked to not have you know, somebody who the first hit on Google is his arrest for a sex offense, you know, an 8-year-old story, I might add.
Yeah, and the thing is, we all on that particular bit of business could have easily said, okay, if you're apologizing for it, if this is your mea culpa, cool, don't ever fucking do it again. But it's like, you try to deflect the issue enough times and people are just gonna side eye you at a certain point, because we're not stupid. For the kind of people who pay attention to these sorts
right.
of details,
I mean, it's like,
it's
a, you
just
know,
how much bullshit you want to put up with.
Right. I mean, and we've said it again. I mean, you get a background check now to go pump, you know, to go sit behind the counter at a gas station. You get a federal background check. So you're telling me that on your show, where there's children running around, because it was a video game tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry, but okay. That was months ago. Let's bring this into the here and now.
Yeah, into the here and now, the biggest factor to me in particular is the fact that it proved something to me that Kenny does make for a good person to chase the title, but holding the title has just not been... It has not been spectacular by any means. A match with Ishii, which normally they have bangers together.
Oh, usually those are bangers. Absolute bangers.
Yeah. And just that defense against Ishii felt a lot more like, well, we're just playing the usual stuff we played in our past few matches.
Yeah,
let's
run through the greatest hits, you know? And
yeah. And that was fine for what it was, but it was definitely not the kind of encounter that we're used to seeing from these two by any means.
No, not at all.
And a part of me also makes the argument that it's not only just the way he's running through these title defenses, but the fact that you're giving Cody two shots at this thing.
Let's talk about that for a minute too, because all right, so Fighting Spirit Unleashed was not a great show. I will say that the best matches on Fighting Spirit Unleashed were the opener and the main event. But even then, the main event existed in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
Because what direction does this main event show us? It was there to pop the crowd. That was it. Which, okay, sure. Fine, has its own value. But if you want to show me what a direction that this company is going in under Harold May, and maybe there's been some booking changes too, I don't know. I'm not that much of a, you know, insider to know. But, this match existed in a vacuum. Because there was no long-term, you know, direction we can glean from this. So then they somehow managed to take a match that absolutely everybody was looking forward to, namely Kenny Omega versus Kota Ibushi at Ryogoku, and somehow turn it into a match that absolutely nobody asked for.
Yep.
And
God.
By the way, that match was trash.
Mm-hmm.
The only parts
that were good about it were when Ibushi was kicking the crap out of everyone involved, as in being done with this white people bullshit.
Yeah,
which,
I mean, yeah, exactly. And,
most
and
of us
Kota,
felt that way.
Yeah, and Kota was, you know, just smacking the shit out of Omega. That was fun, I admit. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's like, you know, there were only two previous three-way matches for the IWGP title. One of them, pretty good. That was the one at the original War of the Worlds show.
War of the Worlds.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That
AJ Styles, Kazuchika Okada, and Michael Elgin. But you know, it was a great match. The first example of a three way for an IWGP title in 2005 with two wrestlers I completely despise in Brock Lesnar and Kazuyuki Fujita, and a Masahiro Chono that was frankly way past his prime. And
yeah,
it was not good
by any means.
No, do not. Yeah, I mean, this is the sort of match I wouldn't even jokingly cover on Strong Style History because it was that bad, you know. But so
again,
I mean,
it's one of.
But I mean, even with this, it's like one of those things. Okay, you know what? If New Japan Pro Wrestling is going to become a U.S. indie, can we at least have some acknowledgement that yes, this is the direction we're going in?
Mm-hmm.
You know. But yeah, that three-way was not good.
Yeah, but in that particular note, I will give a quick shout out in terms of the people who know, because Ruby was at that show. I think she managed to get, just got tickets, like, last minute just to see people out in L.A. And apparently, Io Shirai and Kairi Sane, Kairi Hoja, were right behind her, because they
oh,
were
yeah,
at the
they
show.
Were, oh, yeah, JB met him.
Uh-huh. Yep,
JB met him. JB met him. JB was on hard camera at that show.
Uh-huh. Yep, I did see him. I saw Io and Kairi, and then Ruby mentioned Io and Kairi were right behind him in line, so they actually talked with them for a little bit, so
yeah,
that was cool.
Yeah, okay, yeah, that was great, but let's note when they showed Io and Kairi on camera was during the introduction of Tetsuya Naito, who got the absolute biggest pop of the night.
Which, again, it just proves that every one of us are LRJ marks at heart, and if you can't admit that, you're a terrorist, and I hate you, probably.
But, yeah, but, okay, so, not to perseverate on Kenny Omega, even though he is the face of the company right now, and yeah, he's part of the big reason why I'm becoming less and less interested in the current product, but let's not, you know, put it all on him. Because at the same time, they held an IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship tournament, and in which three out of the four guys have been rumored for months to be going up to the heavyweights. And the one guy who has not been rumored gets jobbed out to begin with, in Bushi.
And don't get me wrong, I do know that there was that particular history of Kushida being in a cold streak at the particular event in which they had that semifinal match between them, and I get that you had a story to tell in which he finally breaks through that, but at the same time, if you were going to do that, why not just shift the seats to have the Kushida Bushi match in the finals? Because out of those particular matches that that happened during the tournament in and of itself, Kushida Bushi was the best one.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Like the finals were actually the disappointing match for me, and that's just because I think at this point Marty is determined to get his money out of Bullet Club shit rather than actually wrestle like he used to in Progress.
Yeah,
that's just me, though.
And frankly, I will say this. Frankly, the Ospreay Skrull match, which is this has only been like what the 50th time they've done this match. It started out hot, but the ending was trash. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know at the same time. Okay, so we also and so yeah. I just don't see the value in crowning a junior champion who's been rumored for months to be graduating up to heavyweights, along with the other two of the other guys in the tournament, and then you job out the one guy who is probably going to be remaining as a junior heavyweight.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, we really like Kushida in this show. We do.
Oh, Kushida's great. I love Kushida.
Yeah, we just figure at this point, like, if you're rumoring him going up to heavyweights at this point, why just not pull the trigger on that rather than kind of keep dangling the carrot in front of us and then just keep him as a junior kind of thing?
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about some other weight class nonsense here coming up shortly. But,
oh, boy.
Keeping going on with this, so... You know, so Fighting Spirit Unleashed, the Gorillas of Destiny beat the Young Bucks for the tag team belts. Again, not a great match, and it would have had a lot more suspense had it not also already been rumored that the Young Bucks are taking the rest of the year off, too, you know?
Yeah, just about, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, so let's also rewind to 2 months ago, when they made Juice Robinson look like an absolute star.
At
G1 special, and then you just made him look like a complete fool. You made him look like a complete fool to Cody Rhodes, who then inserts himself into, again, the match that everybody wanted, turning it into a match that nobody asked for.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those things, like, Cody playing this up as the whole, oh yeah, it's like, just kept getting called one of Dusty's kids, and I'm actually his child. I'm like, shut the fuck up already at this point. Like,
my God.
This is not worth getting... This isn't worth making the booking call that they made at that show.
Yeah, no, this
It absolutely is not.
Yeah, this was a bad move, and it just made Juice look like a complete geek after he made this absolute star-making performance in San Francisco.
Yeah, and not to mention
again,
the fact that
a match that an actual shoot happened, mm-hmm. you know, in the midst of it.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that with the way they were building him up in the G1, it seems like they were building this fall season for him to just go ham on these defenses and really, really get his name out there. And now you're just like,
I mean, yeah, he had a rough G1, but I mean, he even acknowledged that, and he came through in the end, you know.
And they played to the story of his hand on top of it too, which I thought would have made absolutely a brilliant way of just, you know, establishing this kind of gauntlet of defenses that he had to run through. But no, we're going to cater to Dusty's child and the NWA champion for some ungodly fucking reason. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm just done with Cody Rhodes at this point in my life.
Yeah.
Like, if he just wanted to hide under a rock and just stay there for the rest of his life, that'd be fine by me.
You know what? He is a great character. He is a very mediocre professional wrestler. You know, he's a great character, though.
It's like, yeah, we can acknowledge how great the character is, but I don't think sacrificing the active roster of New Japan for a part-time character is the right move.
Yeah,
again,
I don't either.
And I say this as somebody who loves Chris Jericho, by the way, like, a lot, and still feel this IC title situation is nonsense. So,
yeah, all right.
For context,
yeah. So now we're up to, I mean, we've already kind of done a lot of bitching about King of Pro Wrestling, but let's get to, let's get to an actual positive that happened through King of Pro Wrestling. So, like, The week beforehand, they announced that there was going to be a fill-in member of Los Ingobernables, whilst Hiromu Takahashi, of course, recovers from his hellified neck injury that he suffered.
And the coolest tie package that New Japan probably produced in months, proving yet again that Naito can look cooler than the entirety of these Bullet Club geeks in a matter of 5 minutes than they do in months. So
I mean, it was such a great promo that we just watched it and we didn't even I forgot, you know, credit to whomever it was on Twitter who brought up the great point of, you know, how conditioned we are, and then if you were to show this to anyone who doesn't follow New Japan, you'd be like, oh, well, Evil looks cool. Sonata, he's looking pretty badass. We're guessing Naito's the leader. Is that actually a stuffed cat with a studded leather jacket?
Yeah.
And to us, we're like, oh, it's another day in Ingobernables.
Just another day
in La Mundial de Ingobernables.
But yeah, not to get it twisted, King of Pro Wrestling had some good matches within it, but I feel like moments-wise, this was the biggest for
this
a
was,
lot of people,
the
fact that they announced a new pareja.
Yeah, a new pareja, and it was somebody, and I actually kind of predicted it, and I'm glad I was right, and the new, if you weren't aware, the new member of Los Ingobernables is Shingo freaking Takagi.
Amazing. For me, I was just extra giddy given the fact that I actually got the opportunity to see him at Battle of Los Angeles this year, just a couple of weeks prior to this show, and just the man is an absolute beast dating back to his Dragon Gate days, and it's going to be much fun.
Which only recently just ended, let's be frank here. Mm-hmm, he only just turned in his resignation. But, he looked so crisp. I mean, my honey was like, she'd only ever seen pictures of Shingo, and she was just like, yeah, he looks like a complete badass. And then he pulls out that pumping bomber on show. Like, my God. And
died that match.
Show died, eating pumping bomber and a last falconry. He didn't have to eat Made in Japan because, of course, he won't be performing that move in New Japan because Yoshihashi already has that.
Yep.
But now, here's where I throw in my WTF point about Shingo Takagi being in Los Ingobernables, filling in for Hiromu. This man has been wrestling as a heavyweight for as far back as I can remember. I mean, he was even in Champion Carnival this year in All Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So how the hell are they getting away with him as a quote-unquote junior, but Zack Sabre Jr. can wrestle heavyweight?
I think it's more of a choice at this point than anything, it seems, because they were mentioning, I'll give English commentary credit on this one, because they had Chris Charlton there with Kevin Kelly actually holding it together. So Chris was making the point in which Shingo has always sort of been on the border between the two classes, to where he can jump in to one another at any given point. So they were rumoring even during the tag match that Shingo was likely going to be Bushi's partner for junior tag league. So
yeah,
it was more of a like, okay, that makes sense. It makes sense to have him kind of be the big bully of the junior heavyweights alongside with Bushi filling in up until they get Hiromu back around G1 time. And then at that point, I think it's one of those things you can easily transition Shingo into the heavyweights at that particular venue. So
yeah, I mean, it's just bizarre because, I mean, again, I can't remember the last time he wrestled as a junior, honestly.
Yeah, it's been a while, definitely.
I mean, this is a dude who, I mean, around this time last year, he was teaming with Yuji Okabashi in Big Japan, you know, during their, I think, is it the Psycho Tag League? I think that's what they call it in Big Japan. I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. But, I mean, what the hell? This is great because I love Shingo Takagi. I mean, he is way up there for me. And the fact that he's in this and he is, you know, going to be teaming with Bushi in the Super Junior Tag League. Well, we'll transition into that. But Yeah, that match far and away was the one I most looked forward to on King of Pro Wrestling, and it delivered. You know, for an 8-man tag, it really delivered. And like you said, Sho just absolutely got murdered in that match by Shingo.
Somebody had to take it. Thanks, Sho. We appreciate your sacrifice on this one.
Yeah. Now, mind you, I'm not so keen about renaming Last Falconry, but, you know.
I get why they had to do it, though. Probably just to not, like, I guess make too many references to the time in Dragon Gate kind of thing.
Yeah, but maybe, but at the same time, are we still going to call it, I think, you know, privately, I think all of us are still going to be calling it Last Falconry, you know?
Yeah, I'm right there probably on that same book, set as that might be, but
yeah.
Regardless, very exciting times to have Shingo within the company now. Hopefully he continues to do very great things with it, and we'll see where this goes from here as we kind of go into the power struggle side of the fence now.
Before we go on, we've already buried the main event of King of Pro Wrestling because, it was not good, and I would not recommend watching it if you haven't already. So, as we're recording this, is on Sunday the 14th. There was a bunch of New Japan folk over in OTT in Dublin last night. I have not seen results for that, and I think probably by now, since it's 10 at night in the UK, I'm going to guess that Global Wars UK has already...
It's underway, I believe, if not
Is it underway or if it, it... Yeah, so so we won't have the results for that. We won't be discussing the results of that show
I do, here. I do have although, the... I do have the OTT results, though.
Go ahead. All right. Well, go ahead with that, because I was going to blog about it. Yeah. Strongstylestory.tumblr.com. I was going to blog about that tomorrow. But, go ahead. What do you got?
Yeah, you can still put it in there, definitely. So, just looking at the report here, the OTT Gender Neutral Championship, that LJ Cleary defeated Patty M., Rocky Romero, Raven Creed, and Gino Gambino, Mr. Juicy, to retain the title.
They brought in Gino Gambino, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Uh-huh.
Guess so. So, OTT tag team titles got defended. Kings of the North defeated Warden Hype to retain it. From there was also a tag match between Hiroki Goto and Sean Guinness against Satoshi Kojima and Michael May, which Goto and Guinness picked up the win. Bread Club is very over in Ireland.
I heard. I heard he got soda bread thrown at him.
Yep. Bread got tossed in the ring. May actually gave a slice to Kojima, and Kojima just ate it in the ring. Just got the pop out of it. Scotty Davis defeated Mark Davis out of it. Let's see. Just looking at the related results. So the Gymnastics defeated Angel Cruisers and Jimmy Havoc.
Wow. Whoa, we're talking about the Gymnasty Boys went over there?
Gymnastics is the name, yeah.
Not the Gymnasty Boys from CWF Mid-Atlantic?
No, I don't think that's...
This is a different team. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Must be... I don't keep up with OTT, so apologies on that, you guys, for those who do. Tomohiro Ishii defeated Kushida.
There's a match.
Yeah, but apparently a nice little banger in terms of Ishii selling the arm for Kushida, so...
Oh, well, that's good.
And then Tetsuya Naito, Evo, and Sanada defeated Shane Strickland, Bandido, and Flamita.
Whoa, time out. I thought Bushi was supposed to be at that show.
Not sure.
I remember as reporting. To what happened. Interesting. Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. Let's see here. I'm just kind of looking through the results because apparently at the end of it all, Naito actually grabbed Flamita's mask and wore it as a hat in triumph.
Ooh, damn.
Yep. That was apparently a thing. Then Minoru Suzuki beat Timothy Thatcher. Probably a fantastic match.
As well he should, yes.
Yep, good stuff. And then OTT champion Walter beat Will Ospreay to retain the title.
Okay. All right. Well, sounds like a decent show then. Yeah, like I said, I don't think we have up to date results for Global War, so we're just gonna move on. I'll blog about it. It'll be on the blog probably by the time this show gets posted. So hey, Power Struggle is starting.
Yeah.
And this Tuesday, the 16th of October, you can watch it on NJPW World. The focus point of this is the Super Junior Tag League. This year they're going with an actual round robin format instead of a single elimination like they have in the last few years. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. And some interesting combinations of teams. We've obviously already talked about the LIJ team being Bushi and Shingo Takagi coming into the fold.
Yeah, so let's run down the list here of who's going to be in this. So the full rundown is, of course, Yoshinobu Kanemaru and El Desperado, the current IWGP Junior champions. Their most recent challengers, who were Jushin Thunder Liger and Tiger Mask 4. Kushida and Chris Sabin teaming together. Time Machine! Or something. We had to call them something. So Time Machine. How about that?
Time Machine works for me. It's kind of a nice little nod to Alex Shelley.
It's the Alex Shelley tribute team.
Real life, so.
Yeah. Shout out to Alex Shelley. Ryusuke Taguchi and ACH are teaming in. I really still wish they would sign ACH for real.
Seriously, they need to at this point. Like, ACH is great.
And unlike the IWGP Heavyweight Champion, is actually over. did I say that out loud? I'm sorry.
You did, no worries. The word that I was going to use for him is super.
Anyway. Coming over from CMLL is Volador Jr. and Soberano Jr. Volador having significantly less hair than perhaps you might remember if you don't follow Lucha too closely.
That's a thing now, yes.
He lost a hair match at the Anniversario. Shonya, Roppongi 3K. And then here's an interesting one. Taiji Ishimori bringing in an outside talent because I guess the BCOGs kind of forgot to get another junior. So they bring in Robbie Eagles.
Now, yes, sir.
I'm not so familiar with Robbie Eagles. I know he's Australian.
I'm excited. I've seen him quite a few times in PWG at this point. He was in the Australian tour earlier this year as well in a couple of matches.
I think I remember that.
Very exciting. Very exciting high flyer. He's been gradually putting things together. Had an absolute banger against Shingo in the quarterfinals of Bola this year as well.
Okay. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, him and Ishimori styles will blend together really, really well. And again, him being from Australia, so he has that connection with the Tongans, the Kiwis, and everything else in between. So they'll fit in just fine.
So this is looking good. I did list him as a free agent, though, because he's not, technically in. So unless he starts coming back, in which case, we'll see. On that note, he's not part of the Super Junior Tag League, but did you see who else is back on this tour?
Trying to recall who it was out of the list of people.
Ayato Yoshida, back from K-Dojo.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So actually,
but then again, we guessed he was going to come back every once in a while at least, so
stuff. He's working this entire tour, so this is looking good for him. Now, I know we just spent like this whole half of the show burying the direction of the company and in the malaise we're feeling, but I gotta say, I actually am pretty positive about the Super Junior Tag League part of this.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually the juniors, when the focus is on the juniors, they usually deliver. This year's Best of Super Juniors was a banger.
Definitely.
I thought. And
the tournaments in general have felt pretty great for the most part. I think.
For the most part. Now, we still have the World Tag League coming up, which we'll see how that goes. But this is all in lead up. So that starts on October the 16th, and it's all lead up to Power Struggle. This year on November the 3rd, of course, coming from Osaka Edion Arena. So we're gonna get the wild Osaka crowd again.
Yay
for this one. It's always a banger. So let's run down the matches that they actually have booked for that one so far. Of course, you know, featured on that will be the Super Junior Tag League Final, which, you know, obviously we don't know who that is yet. So moving on from that, Kazuchika Okada and Trent Beretta against Jay White and Bad Luck Fale.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm guessing they're building Okada and Jay White for a Wrestle Kingdom singles match.
Yeah, which is fine by me, because I think at this point, if you're going to keep Okada away from the title picture, keeping his stories more on a personal scale like this is completely fine.
Yeah, I suppose it's just, yeah, well, we'll see how this goes. Hiroshi Tanahashi and David Finlay against the Golden Lovers, which I think I know who's taking the fall in that match.
Yeah, I've got a sneaky suspicion.
The Never Openweight Championship. I want to talk about this for a second. The booked match for this is Taichi defend, who of course he beat Goto during Destruction in Beppu, I believe.
Yep.
Yeah, Taichi defending against Will Ospreay. Chris, I never thought we'd see the day that, despite all the problems I have right now with New Japan's booking, they actually remembered what openweight means.
Yeah, kind of astounding, isn't it?
Yes, they finally remembered what that word actually means.
We're still astounded here, folks, that they actually made this particular call, and even though the wrestlers in question in that particular match are, you know, your mixed bag depending on who you're talking to, the fact that it is an open weight match with the Never Open Weight title is,
yeah. I never thought we'd see the day, especially since the last time they even teased something like this, it was when do you remember last year, actually, when Minoru Suzuki just up and smacked Liger doing commentary?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I do recall that.
I was so pissed that they never followed up with that.
Of course, here
we are talking about, you know, we're also the type of fans like, oh, they need to give new talents a shot and yada yada. We would really like to see this title match between two 50-year-olds.
Yeah. That irony isn't lost on me, sadly.
But then again,
I'm aware that I'm trash, guys. Okay, just leave me be. Let me have this one.
Moving on. Tetsuya Naito and Zack Sabre Jr. Another special singles match for Tetsuya Naito. See, this is where I'm having issues. Is that, you know, I guess we see a direction for Okada now. I don't see a direction for Naito, and Naito was one of the main eventers last January.
Yeah, I'm still figuring that, and I can kind of go into this next. I do think that whatever happens here, I think Naito's picking up the win, finally avenging the G1 loss, singles loss to Zack.
Well, how about the New Japan Cup match, too?
Yeah, I mean, there's that, too. Yeah, he's finally getting his vengeance for those. But I do think the IC title match completely affects where we go with Naito. And I think at this point, it seems like a conclusive idea to just have. And it's weird to see this, because you'd think, hey, he may have invented a dome and everything else. You'd think the heavyweight title is like the only thing really left for him. But then if you think about it in another way, too, there is sort of this thing with the IC title where he hasn't really made his full peace with that particular aspect of his life, and it feels like a chance to do that is by having him take it from Jericho on January 4th.
But that's the thing. Why would he want to go after a belt that he despises, that we've already know that he despises?
No. Here's the thing, though. If Jericho beats Evil and tries to wail on him the same way he did on Naito in the afterwards of Dominion, it's kind of more along the lines of, I'm beating you up because you try to go after my stablemate, my pareja, rather than, and the title is just kind of the thing that I'm going to take from you just so that way you get all butthurt about it, which would be typical Naito.
Yeah, but couldn't we say he already kind of did that when he took it from Suzuki?
True. Which, again, the beats feel a little bit weird, but if this is a way of getting Naito in the second biggest match in the entire card, you know what? At this point, I'm just going to run with it because it's not like they have anything else better for him, I feel, after that, outside of that.
Well, you might be right, and yeah, it's just, yeah, I don't know. I just think that there's still a lot of wasted opportunities going on here. And, of course, we just talked about what it seems to be the main event of the show will be Chris Jericho against Evil for said title. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some matches that look good on Power Struggle. I don't know if I'm going to be going all out for it. I think that the tag league during the tour is going to be the main focus, at least for me and in my interests.
That's fair, yeah.
Because that looks, I mean, usually those shows are usually fire, so, I mean, well, those matches, I mean, I should say. Mm-hmm. There's not like a bad team on this. I mean, thankfully, they went with Chris Sabin instead of, you know, Herb Gordon as the choice to team with Kushida. That would have been, been a complete disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So
agreed.
Thankfully, they went that direction. But so afterwards, there's a Ring of Honor. There's a Global Wars 2018 mini tour hitting like absolutely nowhere. Lewiston, Maine, Lowell, Massachusetts, Buffalo, New York, and Toronto. Toronto seems to be the biggest one that they're hitting.
Yeah.
On this one, but concurrent with that. They announced some details for the Lions Break Project 1 shows. As much as we were saying that they were oversaturating California, I'm down for these shows, and I'll tell you why. There's only two of them. I mean, let me start that over. There's two of these shows, but each one is only going to be like three or four matches.
And, okay, that makes sense since it's on the convention center deal.
Yeah, and it's part of Bushiroad's Kara Expo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to. So if you plan on going to Anaheim for these, you actually do have to get a Kara Expo ticket to attend this. In addition, it's like if you have a Kara Expo badge, you can attend this. But you have to get a Kara Expo badge. Mm-hmm. So it was my reading of it. So those are on November the 10th and 11th. There's been two feature matches, one for each day that's been announced so far. I'll do the one on the 11th first. Kenny Omega versus David Finlay, which, I'm sorry, if you think there's any way in hell David Finlay's coming on top in this match, let me tell you something. The feature match that they have announced so far on November the 10th, I am all for. Brest, are you aware of this match?
No, I am not. By all means, fill me in.
Hirooki Goto versus Jeff Cobb, part two.
Yeah, that should be real interesting, actually. For Cobb beating him up.
I am down for this. I am down for this. I was down for it when they, after, you know, that tag match at Fighting Spirit Unleashed, and Cobb and Goto started going after each other again. It's like, yes, let's give us an impromptu singles match between them right now. But no, they didn't. But, you know, and at least it won't be for the ROH TV title, because I was like, oh, no, please, no.
Yeah. You're like, can you just not? Thanks.
Yeah, can you not? So actually, again, as much as we were burying the saturation of the California shows, I am actually into these shows, just for the smaller scale. And I had the list of who was actually going to be on these shows. Give me a second here. Here's who's been announced as being as part of this. We already know four of them: David Finlay, Kenny Omega, Jeff Cobb, Hirooki Goto. Also on these shows are Jushin Liger, Ryusuke Taguchi, ACH, Rocky Romero, and then two of the Young Lions from the LA Dojo, Clark Connors and Alex Coughlin.
Right. I believe they had the dark match of Fighting Spirit Unleashed on top of it, too.
They did.
So
yeah, they did, which I obviously didn't make tape. They actually did. Did it as a dark match, believe it or not. It's kind of amazing. But, I mean, it is kind of strange that there's only three actual Japanese wrestlers on these shows. But at the same time, again, I'm sure a lot of them are going to be on the War of the Worlds
Yeah, that's what I'm figuring as well.
But, you know, again, I like the smaller scale of these, and I don't think it's going to be as you know, we're going to have this disappointment of, you know, not selling out the Walter Pyramid again.
Yeah.
You know? It says, okay, the ticketing, if you want to sit down at these shows, you have to purchase tickets for the seats. You can get standing room tickets for free.
Yeah.
But that
makes sense if you're in the expo, so.
But either way, you have to have a ticket. You have to have a badge for Kara Expo. So, if you're into Bushiroad's card games, this might not be a bad deal for you.
Mm-hmm. You get to do all the things, basically.
Yeah. So, there's that. So, that gets us pretty much up to date. I mean, we don't obviously know anything about World Tag League lineups, etc. They did announce the dates for Fantastica Mania. I'm kind of wondering why, again, they split up the three Cork and Hall shows instead of doing a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Like last year, it's a Friday, Sunday, Monday.
It could be somebody booked a Saturday already at this point.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah, but that's probably the most likely. But, we don't know too many details. It's eight shows this year, much like last year. It's eight shows. Only the Cork and Hall ones are going to make NJPW World. I think at least one of them is going to be taped for Samurai, I'm sure.
Yeah. Although, on that note as well, since we're talking future shows coming up, one thing that I wanted to point out that's very interesting, because this does have some semblance of New Japan interest as well, for PWG's Smokey and the Bandito, which, fantastic show title name.
It is, I'll agree.
There is a particular singles match that is happening that we thought would have initially happened in Mexico for reasons, but one of the men in question is an absolute coward and won't do it. So it has to happen in America, I guess, where Zack Sabre Jr. of Suzuki Gun fame is going up against Fantastica Mania regular now in Hechicero.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah,
that's actually happening there. Hechicero is debuting in PWG. Zack is coming back for the first time in quite some time, actually. And this is where that match is happening. So,
I that is very, very interesting. However, at the same time, I'm going to bury something here about cowardly booking, in that we talked about how, you know, leading up to All In, they had an actual dream match sitting right there and they didn't take it with Penta versus Okada, right? And,
yep.
And the reason being was, you know, there was some insanely strong politics involving Penta and where he can and can't work and who he can work up against. This week's Arena Mexico show, which I have not been watching the last few CMLL shows, mm-hmm. because of, you know, the involvement of a certain wrestler that we don't want to really mention too much. But in any event, and the main event is Rush, Terrible, and Barbaro Cavernario, who seems to be an unofficial Ingobernable at this point, going up against, I think, oh shoot, now I forgot who it was. Hang on. I mean, I know two of them. I forgot who the third member of this is. Hang on, I got this here, because we are a very organized podcast. Okay, that's who I thought, but I just want to make sure. Caristico, David Finlay, who's still there, and you know where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah,
Penta.
I'm very well aware.
Penta.
Yep.
So I guess the politics aren't so strong that David Finlay can wrestle in the same match as Penta, but other New Japan guys can?
I think they've realized at this point around All In that Penta just does not give a single fuck anymore and wrestles wherever he can, to where I don't think this is as big of a deal as it possibly would have been eons ago, because now Penta's been pretty much everywhere at this point. He's doing CMLL, he's been doing Impact, he's still working PWG every so often and things like that. So at this, he's been doing MLW as well with Fenix, if I do remember it correctly. Yeah, Phoenix, so he's been
he and Phoenix are the tag champs right now.
Okay, so they've been just about everywhere at this point, to where I think the politics are nowhere near as strong of a play into it as well. But it also, I feel, it could have been a situation where if they wanted to do Okada versus Penta, both guys would feel like they should be the one going over. So maybe that was a conflict of interest there for Cody and the Bucks when they were trying to book all this shit. So
yeah, I don't know. I don't think that. I don't think Penta is so. He obviously jobbed to Omega at that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's as big of a deal for him, but it could be that the office thinks it's a bigger deal for like Okada, for example. So
yeah.
Either way, it's a shame that particular match didn't happen. So
yeah, I'm gonna be salty about that for a while. Just so everyone knows.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah. So, yeah. So
Walter versus Jack. Yeah, Walter versus Jeff Cobb is also happening on that same card, so nut.
Oh, on the PWG show?
Yep, because Cobb won Battle of Los Angeles, so he's cashing in his shot, basically.
Well, that makes sense, yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Yeah, have they even announced the DVDs for sale for Bola yet?
They have the DVDs have already been on pre-order, but I'm assuming because Dragon is the one that works on those, since he's like a graphic designer and all of that on his actual day job sort of things, it seems like he's trying to do all three of them at the same time, get them out, and then I guess get previews out after that. I'm not sure exactly how that bit is working, but apparently the DVDs and Blu-rays are for sale at this point, and then they are shipping out at a certain point.
Okay.
If not having already been shipped out. It's just we haven't seen the previous forum, which kind of makes you sort of go, okay, what the hell, guys?
The previous show hasn't been released?
The previews haven't been released yet. I figure it got to be coming at a certain point before this show coming up, which is on this upcoming Friday on the October 19th. What was I meaning to say here? Oh, yeah. The other big thing to be on the lookout for, especially now that we know Shingo is the new LAJ member, is that during the semifinals of Bola, he actually pinned Walter clean in the middle of the ring, and Walter's the PWG champion right now. So there is that possibility somewhere down the road Shingo comes back for a title shot to North America at a certain point or another. And with New Japan, he still has the flexibility to do that.
Even though officially he's a junior. In New Japan, okay. Ooh, Lordy.
he clotheslined the hell out of Walter. Like, it had to be, like, the loudest actual lariat I've heard in my entire life.
He hit a pumping bomber. Yeah, I remember you were freaking out about those, so.
Like, whew.
All right, so that's I think that's where we're at. And, I mean, again, sorry if this, if the first half of this show seemed to indicate that we were, trying to look for an excuse to get out of it. We're not really. It's just, just keep in mind, this is a new time for pro wrestling only. I know they just revamped the website and everything. Don't expect us to be on a regular schedule, is all I can say. We kind of do this, when in between New Japan tours, so we can, round up everything and all that. But deep down we're still fans. It's just, again, the last few months have just seen a creative decline in at least my opinion. I can't really speak for Chris, but we'll see. I mean, again, I'm hyped for the Super Junior Tag League because this seems like it's my jam. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how Power Struggle goes, and we'll definitely be coming back after Power Struggle, because I do at least want to hit our anniversary. I set a goal for myself to get to episode 50, and this is only episode 45. So, mm-hmm. There's that. Strong Style of History is kind of an elephant in the room, because I don't know when we're going to get back to that, unfortunately. Especially since, again, with two of the main drivers behind Strong Style of History were Steve and Lawrence, and now they're, stepping away. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if something strikes us, because I mean, there was something I wanted to do for episode 20. I think what episode? What was the last episode we did? Like 16, I think.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I would say 16. Yes,
16 sounds right to me. And so I do want to at least get a couple of more topics in before we hit episode 20, because the episode 20 has been like the thing I really, really, really want to get to. Because it's been a topic that's really close to my heart. I think Chris knows what it is. I'm not going to say what it is. But it's just something I wanted to say for a special occasion. So, but we're going to get to that eventually. So, yeah, so I hope that, you know, our new masters over at Pro Wrestling Only. Who's the guy? Charles. Yeah, Charles. Hey, hope you're hope you just remain patient with us, and we'll deliver content when and as we can. So that's all I got to say. Chris, do you have anything else?
No, I'd say we're about covered here for the most part at this point.
All right, so yeah, it's gonna be it's gonna be a transition, both, you know, obviously for the show behind the scenes, just because of the change to pro, you know, to only Pro Wrestling Only, and you know, it looks like it's just me and Chris now. So hey, if nothing else, we should actually be able to blow through these shows now. Yeah, because it's just the two of us.
We've caught up at this point. So here's hoping, right?
Yeah. So anyway, so Chris, go ahead and plug yourself.
Oh, just simple enough, just roundabout. You can just go on Twitter and find me there at Brazilian Fury. That's Brazilian with an S instead of a Z. That's really as simple as I can get at this point. Or about every so often, you'll see me at Captain Jack's Armbar Emporium show over in the Steel Cage Network, just co-hosting whenever he needs somebody else to talk shop on New Japan stuff. That's sort of how I've kept up with the actual product, to be completely honest with you, because Jack keeps asking me back. So, I mean, shout out to Jack, though. He's one of my best. He's become one of the best dudes, like, altogether to just talk shop with in terms of grabs over the past few months. We had a blast doing Bola couple weeks back as well too, so always an exciting time. Every so often, whenever that happens, I'll tweet about it. So yeah, just follow my Twitter, you'll know.
And you can find me at Strong Style Story without the E in style on Twitter. I actually resurrected my personal Twitter account, so if you really have a hankering to follow me, at GD Wessel, that's two S's, one L. So there's that. The blog is, of course, at strongstylestory.tumblr.com. I'm still keeping that up. And you have been listening to this through the Pro Wrestling Only podcast feed. So, Chris, any final words?
We'll see you next time. And we swear to God, we will not take anywhere near as long as the last time.
Yeah.
We'll try at the very least to not to.
Yeah, we'll be back around the time of we'll be back sometime after Power Struggle. So that's all we can say. Maybe we'll try to sneak in a Strong Style History while we can. Maybe we'll try to do that, you know, just to make people happy. So anyway, until then, on behalf of Chris Damasceno, shout out to Lawrence O'Brien and Steve Cash. We love you, brothers. Just, you know, we'll have you back whenever you're ready to come back. So yeah. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Damasceno, I'm Jeffrey Wessel. This has been episode 45 of the Strong Style Story podcast. Just keep it, keep listening, and we'll be back after Power Struggle. So enjoy, take care, goodbye.